It's an easy idea, but I actually don't believe it because of the way that Alexander treated the Persian nobility subsequently, and also because I don't believe that finally Aristotle had a great deal of influence on Alexander. It seems to me that this young 16-year-old was not particularly concerned with biology, nor with ethics, nor with state constitutions. I think this was a young man who was vastly more interested in learning how to kill people and to hunt lions. Strategy, warfare, hunting, the typical training of an aristocrat and of a Macedonian nobleman, these are what excited Alexander, keeping a copy of the Iliad under his pillow because he was inspired by the notion of being a Homeric hero. Now, if that's true, then I think we can further say that the contemporary who was of some importance to Alexander, rather than Aristotle, was probably Xenophon, who we mentioned in the last lecture. You'll recall that I pointed out that Xenophon was an Athenian gentleman of wide-ranging interests, had written histories, had written biographies, and so forth. But the one thing that I did not mention about him was that one of the most evocative bits of writing that we have from Xenophon is a first-hand account of the march up country by a mercenary force of Greek hoplites who were being employed by Cyrus the Younger in his attempt to seize the throne of Persia. Now, it turned out that in 401 BC, Cyrus was defeated at the Battle of Canaxa and subsequently died. And at that point, a Greek army of 10,000 hoplites, mercenaries, found itself in the middle of the Persian Empire, cut off from the Greek homeland and certainly cut off from any friendly forces or territory. That force managed to march all the way back to the Black Sea before eventually returning to Greece. And the story of that triumphant march up country, as it's called, in which these Greek hoplites proved themselves time and again to be more than a match for the lighter-armed Persian troops, I'm sure had a profound effect on the Greeks of the time. It was, in fact, the event that demonstrated that Pan-Hellenism really could work, in the sense that an army of Greeks really had marched all the way into Persia and back again and had not been defeated or destroyed. I think that's the model that was inspiring Alexander to march ever onward into the Persian Empire, the belief that militarily his soldiers were better. And in fact, in that respect, he was quite right. They were. Assuming his father's position as captain general of the Greek forces, he undertook a campaign that led to two quick defeats of the Persians at the Granicus River in Asia Minor, shortly after the Macedonians and Greeks had crossed, and then secondly at Issus in northern Syria, where it seems that during the night the armies of the great king and of the Greeks had actually passed each other and found themselves in reverse order the following morning before fighting a decisive engagement won by Alexander and causing the Persians to flee. Now, at this moment, the Persian forces withdrew back into the Persian mainland, into the heartland of the Persian Empire, but Alexander chose rather to turn south. So from Syria, he marched through the territory which, to make this a little clearer, we'll use by their modern names, he marched through Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Gaza, and Egypt. Now, the reason that he was doing this, I think, is quite simple from a tactical point of view. He was making sure that the Persian forces, and particularly the Phoenician fleets of Tyre and Sidon, would not be free to operate in his rear while he was marching further east. He was securing this territory so that there would be no attacks on Greece and Macedon by these forces of the Phoenicians while he himself was further inland. But that's not what this episode in his history is remembered for. What became truly important was that as a result of this turning aside and heading south, Alexander made his way to an oracle of Zeus in the western desert west of Egypt at a place called Siwa. And it was there, in the desert at this oracle, that Alexander was greeted as the son of God. Now, much ink has been spilled trying to explain exactly what was meant by that, or whether this is a later fiction of historians, or whether it actually grew up from a misunderstanding of the Greek and that, for example, the priest of the oracle tried to say, O Paideon, O my boy, but actually said, O Paideos, O son of Zeus.